Rick Smith Show.
Wonder if they're going to have that, the Melania Trump jacket for sale. I don't care. Actually, I do. I mean, this is one of those things that I do care what this administration does. I do care what happens to this country. I do care what happens to those children and their families. I'm sorry, I can't go the I don't care route. I'm just not doing it. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world in Washington, D.C. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So have you seen the big jacket dust up?
Well, I just saw it. I was with a friend of mine who's extremely political. He raised the issue to me. I didn't hear about it. And the intent was to, send it as a message to the news media. But what a jacket to wear, that could be connotated that it was about the kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a too nuanced message that nobody, I don't think anybody gets or buys or, thinks is the right message. And, why does she show up now? Why the photo op now? Why the PR stunt now? Where was she a couple of days ago, weeks ago? Why now?
Well, it's because of him reversing his position and also, I think he got a lot of heat from her privately, as I'm told, on the issue. So I think that's part of it. And the other part was to take the sting away by sending the first lady there.
Do you really believe that? Do you believe that she and the daughter were giving him any pressure? Because, the reports are coming out now that, he saw this as a winner. He saw this as, the kneeling gate and the kneeling in the NFL. He saw this as, inflaming the culture warriors, to come up and rise up for the family against the Democrats. I don't think he ever thought it was going to come and bite him in the behind.
No, I don't think he did, but I don't think that they were comfortable. I think that Melania Trump and Ivanka Trump, from what I understand, became extremely uncomfortable with it and urged him to stop.
I hope you're right. I hope there's some humanity there, but I'm struggling with that, given all that this administration has done, and this just being another low of a whole bunch of lows. And I hope the world looks at this and looks at the jacket and looks at all this and doesn't clump all of us into that I don't care category.
Right.
Let's move on. Some interesting fireworks today in the House of Representatives. Some immigration stuff. What happened on the immigration front?
Well, the conservative bill went down, and then there was to be a vote right after that on the compromise bill, which doesn't have enough votes because Democratic side's not going to be for it, nor are the conservatives. And then it was asked by some conservative members to hold the bill, as I understand it, and hold it till tomorrow. So they're kind of regrouping. What I suspicion, and frankly, what I would do if I was there, even if I didn't like the bill and I liked the conservative bill, I would urge passage of the second bill that they have, the compromise bill that they've withheld till tomorrow, and urge passage of it. So I think they're trying to get the conservatives to say, look, you're making something worse. At least keep this process moving. That's why they take one more day to try.
Yeah, because here's the thing, and this is where I keep reminding some of my conservative friends and Republican listeners that the Republicans control all the levers of power. This argument that it's all the Democrats' fault is kind of feigned, and it's kind of extremely disingenuous and wrong.
Right.
When you control the whole system, you can't claim that the person who has no power is boogering it up. Just kind of throwing that out there. Also today, the farm bill, a little bit on the farm bill. I guess we're literally going to take food out of the mouths of children. Not going to happen?
Well, I don't think, the farm bill's it was hard to pass in the House. It's got a whole process left in the Senate. I don't know what will happen with it. There were food stamp changes. I don't know if that'll hold in the Senate. It may not. Obviously, the Senate is a whole different body.
Yeah, I mean, $1.5 trillion cuts in Medicaid as well. I mean, you look at this, just the pain and the suffering that the House leadership, thought was well worth putting forward. And again, look, we both know how this game will end up, and you're right, the Senate will dull some of the edges. But at the end of it, this is the priorities of this party right now. The priorities are, you know, we're gonna kick the poor and we're gonna enrich the wealthy, and you know, heaven forbid you're on the wrong side of the message.
Well, they always try to do these farm bills too. When I was there, we were doing farm bills, and you know, I don't even know why food stamps are in the farm bill anyway. They ought to be in Health and Human Services for the overall debate.
Yeah, well, what do you think about the whole idea of getting rid of the Department of Labor and the Department of Education and combining them into one really small and ineffective kind of department?
Well, I've heard this one for years, and obviously labor ought to be kept separate, period. You know, labor needs to have its own entity. Education, I don't think there's really anything you can combine it with. They could change it a bit. 68 cents of every dollar used to stay in D.C. They could get more money out there if they wanted to retweak it. But I don't know how you come. There's no. What's the word I'm looking for, Rick? There is no similarities as far as agencies of combining those. You know, there's nothing that matches labor and education. It just doesn't match.
Well, we've done away with the word labor. It's now workforce. So they're completely getting rid of that. And, you know, the only thing that I could possibly see that would have some bit of symbiotic relationship, if you will, would be a job training. You know, maybe you could put them together and say that that's education, lifelong learning, that kind of stuff. But everything else, no, I simply don't.
Well, I mean, for example, you could take the EPA and the Department of Interior, and you could combine those two agencies because, you know, one deals with the environment and the other is the land, right? So that has some similarity.
Right.
But labor is an entity within itself.
No, I agree.
And there's nothing that fits with it.
No,
it would not match.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, at the end of it, it's all about neutering labor's ability to defend workers' rights in the Department of Labor to do anything. You know, it's those job-killing regulations, Bob, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thoughts on killing the post office? Pro, con, we all in favor of privatizing the post office?
You're flashing me back to 1995. But these are the same issues. The post office is a hybrid right now anyway. It's half government, half private right now, in a sense. And, of course, but the post office still had to come to us and you know, for its jurisdiction and the law and everything else. You know, it had to.
No, I mean, and the thing is you know, I keep looking at this, and I've asked the question to some of my rural friends, what are you going to do when the rates double? What are you going to do when the post office says, we don't have to deliver to your house anymore? What are you going to do when you can't get anything? You're going to have to drive, you know, into town to go to a post office box that you're going to have to set up to get your mail or to get packages because it's not profitable to show up to your house.
Right. But we've struggled with this for years.
But, you know, the thing is, and this is, there's nothing to struggle about with this, in my opinion, Bob. I mean, the post office does a great job. For, 50 cents, I think it is now, 51? For like 50 cents, I can send a letter across this entire country. I can send it 3,000 miles. I can send it to Alaska for a half a buck. Really? And
I mean,
somehow,
it's the same old debate about privatizing. I mean, they tried it before. Yeah, you know, it's a hybrid now, and it's functioning. And I know it's trying to come up with ways to stay in the modern era. But you know, people will still mail things. They still will.
Of course, how are we going to get our junk mail, man?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to get all that election nonsense?
Right.
That nobody reads.
That's right.
But it's good for industry. It's good for business. It's good to keep the wheels flowing. And oh, by the way, just to throw it out there so everyone knows, the post office is profitable. They make about $1 billion a year in profits. If it weren't for the 2006 law to mandate that they pay, you know, what is it? I think it's like, you know, 70 years into the future, the pension and the health care of workers that haven't even been born yet, they would be wildly profitable.
Exactly.
Just kind of throwing that out there as a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the House. A little dust up today. Meadows and Paul Ryan, you know, maybe a little finger point, a little shouting. What was going on?
Well, Meadows, at the end of the whole deal, when he stormed away from the speaker, and he's head of the Freedom Caucus, you know, the conservative caucus, he tried to downplay it, and I guess I just don't have respect when they do this. He tried to downplay it and say that, oh, he was just being passionate. No, he wasn't. He was angry. He said, I've had it. He was standing on the floor in front of everybody yelling at the speaker, and he threatened to do a discharge petition to control the floor of the House on legislation. They threatened to throw the speaker out. So, you know, let's call it what it is. He was furious. He was angry, and that's because he wanted a vote on the conservative immigration bill, which they hadn't died. But further than that, he wanted Ryan to give him the votes. He wanted Ryan to force people to vote his way.
Yeah. As much as I don't like Paul Ryan, and I don't, you got to wonder if he's got a calendar behind his desk ticking off the days until he's out of there.
Well, sure. I remember the first time he came into the House. I was there. I ran the freshman orientation program. And I can tell you this about Paul Ryan. He is deep within, you know, his wife and kids and doing things with him. His father passed when he was 16 suddenly. So, you know, he's that type of guy, and I think now he is on the countdown. He just wants to, you know, go back and do something where he remains the vast majority of his time in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I still fear what he ends up doing on the other side. And his the person that he's tapped to run in his place, I think, is just as bad. But we'll see how that plays out. And finally, evidently we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Does anybody not know that already, by the way?
Well, you know, I don't think people sometimes realize the, you know, the amount of discrepancy. I'll take India, for example, because I travel there. Hepatitis C, the cure for it, as they call it, is $500. And that same medicine in America is $58,000. $500 in India, $58,000 in India. And on top of it, the second thing is that one of five Americans will not fill their prescriptions because they can't. They can't afford to fill the prescriptions that they need. But, you know, you're right. Everybody, you know, should know this by now. And unfortunately, on this news story, it's a blip. You're probably, you know, the second person that's brought it up today. And I think it's just so tragic that pharmaceutical companies get away with everything.
No, I'm fortunate. Neither my wife or I, we're on any prescription drugs. We have, you know, we go to the doctor and they go, "You're not on something?" I'm going, "No, I'm not. Thank goodness. Let's knock on something." But right. You know, if I were, you know, the cost of, you know, when I talk to people, how much of their income they spend on prescription drugs, and how they're hostage to, you know, a healthcare system that just, you know, really is just gouging the life out of them. You know, something has got to be done about this. And you ask the average American what we should be doing, and we should be moving towards fixing it. But it seems like nobody can ever come to a solution, you know, outside of, you know, the extremes, which are we have socialized medicine or the absolute pay or die free market. And you go, there's got to be somewhere near sanity that we can all get what we need and not end up broke.
Right. Well, I've never even seen one iota of an effort to do anything, you know, with the pharmaceuticals. Nope. And then, of course, the healthcare system itself is, you know, now in a complete train wreck. I don't know. I don't know when it'll change. Or I know people can't keep up at all with the healthcare. Period. They can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's tragic, and you've got right now an administration that their sole focus is on just destroying what little help people have in the way of the ACA. Purely because it was the last guy who did it, and for no other reason than that, because at the end of it, this was their plan back in the 90s. It's a whole argument we can get into, but Bob, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Good stuff. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. No, really, the healthcare thing is just maddening to me on so many levels, in that, you know, we could be doing a lot of good stuff. We're spending more money than any country in the world on healthcare, and we're leaving millions of people, tens of millions of people, uninsured. And as he pointed out, one in five people are going without filling their prescriptions. And you got to ask the question, by not doing that, what problems are you causing down the road that will eventually cost us more in the long run? again, back to that, you know, penny wise, pound foolish mentality. Just amazing. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.